Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're gonna peel back the layers on something really fundamental to, well, pretty much every business out there.
That's right.
How they figure out what to make, what it's actually gonna cost them, and, you know, how they eventually make a profit. We've got some great source material that lays this out really clearly.
Yeah, and it's fascinating, isn't it? Because these economic ideas, they're not just like dusty theories in a textbook. They're actually the engine driving every single decision, you know, from the little bakery on the corner to these huge global tech companies.
Totally.
So our mission basically is to cut through the maybe confusing jargon, give you the key takeaways so you can kind of see the business world a bit differently.
Absolutely. So whether you're just curious about, say, why your favorite local spot charges what it does, or maybe you're looking at a big company's numbers, getting these basics down is, well, it's crucial.
It really is.
So let's dig in. We'll explore this idea of the short run versus the long run, look at all the different types of costs, how revenue actually works, and what profit really means to an economist. Okay, so first up, we need to tackle a really core concept in economics. This difference between the short run and the long run when we talk about production.
Right.
And it's maybe not about time in the way you'd normally think, is it?
No, not exactly like days or months.
Yeah.
It raises a good question, though. What does define these periods?
Okay.
So in the short run, the key thing is that at least one of your factors of production is fixed. It can't be changed quickly.
Like the building itself.
Exactly, like a factory building or maybe some really heavy specialized machinery or even a long-term contract. Those are your fixed factors.
Got it.
But then you have your variable factors, things like hiring more workers, buying more raw materials, using more fuel. Those you can change relatively easily depending on how much you want to produce.
So you could hire more baristas tomorrow if your coffee shop gets busy, or order more beans. But you can't just magically double the size of the shop overnight.
Precisely. And that distinction, what's fixed versus what's variable right now, that shapes basically everything else that follows in the short term.
Okay, so with that short run idea in mind, some things fixed, some things variable. Let's look at how we measure output. How productive is a business being?
Yeah, so we measure productivity in a few ways. There's the obvious one, total product, or TP. That's just, you know, the total amount of stuff you produce.
Simple enough.
But then it gets more insightful. You got average product, AP, which is your output per unit of input. So like output per worker.
Okay, efficiency.
Right. And then there's marginal product, MP. This one's really important. It's the additional output you get from adding just one more unit of a variable input.
So the extra coffee cups made by hiring one more barista.
Exactly. It tells you the impact of that next addition. Change in total product divided by the change in input.
And this marginal product idea leads us straight into something super important in economics, maybe one of the most famous laws, the law of diminishing returns. Sometimes called the law of variable proportions, too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely fundamental.
It sounds a bit negative. Diminishing returns.
Well, it's actually quite logical when you think about it. So as you keep adding more and more units of a variable input, let's stick with workers to your fixed inputs, like that fixed-size factory or bakery.
Mm-hmm.
Your marginal product, the extra output from each new worker, will probably rise at first. You know, specialization happens. People find a rhythm.
Okay, that makes sense. More hands make light work, initially.
Initially, yes. But eventually that marginal product will start to fall. If you keep cramming more workers into that same fixed space, they start getting in each other's way. There's not enough equipment to go around.
Okay. Too many cooks spoil the broth, literally sometimes.
Exactly. Adding too many workers can actually make them less productive overall at the margin. And crucially, this law only happens in the short run because you have those fixed inputs acting as a bottleneck.
Right. If you could expand the factory size, too, it might be different.
Precisely. So you get these stages, increasing returns at first, then diminishing returns. And if you push it too far, you could even get negative returns where adding another worker actually reduces total output.
Okay. So diminishing returns affect our output in the short run. Now let's connect that to the money side. Let's talk costs, still in the short run. What are the main types of costs we need to think about?
So costs in the short run also fall into categories based on that fixed variable idea. You have fixed costs, or FC. These don't change with your output level. Think rent for your building, maybe salaries for your permanent office staff, insurance.
The bills you have to pay even if you shut down production for a day.
Exactly. Then you have variable costs, VC. These change directly with how much you produce.
Right.
So more output means more costs here. Think raw materials, energy used by machines, wages for hourly production workers.
Got it. And total cost is just?
Total cost TC is simply adding those two together. Fixed costs plus variable costs equals total costs. TC equals FC plus VC. Easy enough.
Okay, but then we drill down further into the averages and that marginal concept again, right? These seem really key for making actual business decisions.
They absolutely are. So average fixed cost, AFC, is just your total fixed cost divided by the quantity you produce. It's the fixed cost per unit.
Okay.
Average variable cost, AVC, is your total variable cost divided by quantity variable cost per unit. And average total cost, ATC, is total cost per unit. You can calculate it as TC divided by quantity, or just add AFC and AVC together.
Right.
But the really critical one for deciding, should I make one more, is marginal cost MC.
Ah, like marginal product, but for cost.
Exactly. It's the change in your total cost that results from producing just one additional unit of output. Change in TC divided by change in quantity.
And when you graph these costs, they don't just go in straight lines, do they? They have specific shapes.
No, they definitely don't. And the shapes tell a story. AFC, average fixed cost, always falls as you produce more.
Because you're spreading the same fixed cost over more units.
Precisely. Spreading the overhead. Now, AVC and ATC typically form a U-shape.
A U-shape. Why?
Well, they initially fall as you get more efficient, maybe workers specialize, you get better at processes. But then, because of those diminishing returns we talked about.
It comes back to that.
It starts taking more variable input, like labor hours, to get each additional unit of output. So your variable costs per unit start to rise, pulling AVC, eventually ATC back up.
Okay, so efficiency gains first, then diminishing returns bite back.
You got it. And here's a key relationship. Marginal cost, that MC curve, will always intersect both the AVC and ATC curves at their absolute minimum points.
Why is that so important?
Think about it like your grade point average. If your score on the next test, marginal cost, is lower than your current average cost, it pulls the average down. If your next test score is higher, it pulls the average up.
Okay, I see.
So as long as MC is below ATC, it's pulling ATC down. When MC crosses ATC, it means the cost of the next unit is now higher than the average, so it starts pulling the average up. That minimum point is peak cost efficiency for that level of fixed assets.
All right, let's shift perspective now. We move from the short run with its fixed constraints to the long run. And the big change here is no fixed factors.
That's the fundamental difference. In the long run, enough time has passed that a firm can adjust everything. All inputs are variable. You can build that bigger factory, invest in completely new technology, downsize, exit a market.
Yeah.
Anything's on the table.
So no distinction between fixed and variable inputs anymore, just costs related to the chosen scale.
Exactly. And because you can change the scale of everything, we start talking about returns to scale.
Returns to scale. Okay, how does that differ from diminishing returns?
Good question. Diminishing returns, or law of variable proportions, is a short-run concept. It happens when you add one variable input to fixed inputs. Returns to scale is a long-run concept. It's about what happens to output when you increase all inputs proportionally.
Oh, okay. Scaling everything up together.
Right. So if you, say, double all your inputs, double the factory size, double the workers, double the machines, and your output more than doubles, that's increasing returns to scale. Bigger is better, more efficient.
Makes sense.
If output exactly doubles, that's constant returns to scale. Size doesn't change per unit efficiency. And if output less than doubles, you've hit decreasing returns to scale. Getting bigger is actually making you less efficient per unit now.
So businesses are always trying to figure out where they are on that spectrum as they grow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this leads us to the long run planning tool, the long run average cost curve, or LRAC.
Another cost curve. Is it U-shaped too?
Typically, yes, the LRAC curve is also U-shaped, but for slightly different reasons related to scale itself, not diminishing returns on a fixed asset.
Okay.
Think of the LRAC as being made up of tangent points from lots of different possible short-run average total cost curves.
Mm-hmm.
Each short-run curve represents a different possible factory size or scale of operation.
Okay.
The LRAC traces out the lowest possible average cost to produce any given quantity of output when the firm can choose the optimal plant size. It's like an envelope containing all the possible short-run options.
And within that long-run picture, there's a sweet spot businesses aim for, isn't there? Minimum efficient scale.
MES.
Exactly.
MES is the lowest point on that U-shaped LRAC curve.
So the bottom of the U.
Right. It represents the scale of production, the size of the firm, essentially where it achieves the lowest possible cost per unit. Operating at or near your MES means you're likely very competitive in terms of cost.
So growing beyond that point might actually make you less efficient again.
It can, yeah. That's where decreasing returns to scale might kick in, pushing the LRAC curve upwards again. Finding and operating at MES is often a major strategic goal.
That U-shape of the LRAC curve really brings us nicely to these powerful forces, economies and diseconomies of scale.
Yeah, they're the underlying reasons why the LRAC curve has that shape.
Okay, so let's break that down. Economies of scale. That's the good part of getting bigger, right? Costs go down.
Precisely. Economies of scale are all the factors that cause a firm's average cost to fall as it increases its scale of production. It's the downward sloping part of the LRAC.
And diseconomies are the opposite.
Right. Diseconomies of scale are factors that cause average costs to start rising after the firm reaches a certain size beyond its MES. That's the upward sloping part of the LRAC.
Let's dig into the types of economies of scale. You mentioned internal ones happening within the firm itself.
Yeah, there are quite a few. A big one is technical economies. This is about using large-scale specialized machinery or production lines, like in a car factory, mass production techniques.
Stuff a small shop just couldn't afford or utilize fully.
Exactly. Then there's managerial economies. Bigger firms can hire specialist managers for finance, marketing, HR, etc., leading to more efficiency than one owner trying to do everything.
Makes sense.
You also get marketing economies. Bulk advertising rates are cheaper per person reached. Purchasing economies. Big firms get discounts for buying raw materials in bulk.
The Costco effect for businesses?
Kinda, yeah. Financial economies. Larger, established firms can often borrow money at lower interest rates. Risk-bearing economies. A large firm with diverse products or markets can weather a downturn in one area better than a small, specialized firm.
Spreading the risk.
And don't forget network economies, which are huge today. Think social media or software. The more users there are, the more valuable the service becomes for every user. That's a powerful scale economy.
Wow, okay. Lots of ways getting bigger helps initially.
But it's not just internal factors. There are also external economies of scale.
External, meaning outside the individual firm.
Right. These benefit all firms in a particular industry or region as the whole sector grows. Well, improvements in local infrastructure, better roads or ports that help everyone. A growing pool of skilled labor specializing in that industry makes hiring easier for all firms.
Thanks Silicon Valley having lots of software engineers.
Exactly. Or component suppliers clustering nearby, creating an efficient supply chain for the whole industry. These benefits arise from the industry's concentration and growth, not just one firm's actions.
Okay, but growth isn't a one-way street to efficiency. You mentioned diseconomies of scale. What happens when firms get too big? Let's start with internal ones again.
Right. Internal diseconomies of scale start creeping in when a firm becomes very large and complex. A classic one is coordination problems. Mm-hmm. Just managing thousands of people, different departments, maybe different countries. It gets incredibly complicated.
Bureaucracy starts to slow things down.
Definitely. Poor communication is linked to that messages get lost or distorted traveling up and down a long hierarchy. Sometimes low worker motivation sets in. Employees feel disconnected, like a small cog in a huge machine.
Less personal investment.
Yeah. And then there's this interesting one economists call X inefficiency.
X inefficiency? What's that?
It's basically organizational slack or complacency. It happens when a firm gets so large, maybe so dominant in its market, that the pressure to be hyper-efficient eases off. Waste creeps in. Processes get bloated. Maybe managers aren't as sharp because there's less competitive threat. It's inefficiency that isn't strictly tied to the scale of production, but more to the internal culture and lack of pressure in a very large entity.
Fascinating. So just being big can sometimes lead to sloppiness.
And just like economies, diseconomies can also be external, affecting the whole industry.
Okay, so how does an entire industry growing cause problems for the firms within it?
Think about congestion. If an industry booms in one area, you get traffic jams, overloaded infrastructure that increases transport costs and time delays for everyone.
Right.
Rising input prices is another big one. If all firms are suddenly demanding way more of the same specialized raw materials or components, the price of those inputs goes up for everybody.
Supply and demand for the inputs themselves.
Exactly. And similarly, labor shortages can emerge. If everyone's trying to hire the same type of skilled worker, wages get bid up, making labor more expensive for all the firms in that industry.
Okay, wow. We've covered a ton on production and the cost side of things. Let's switch gears now to the other side of the profit equation. Revenue. Bring the money in.
Yep, absolutely essential. Revenue concepts are generally a bit more straightforward than cost, but just as vital.
So the basics.
Okay, total revenue, TR. That's simply the price you sell your product for, multiply by the quantity you sell. P times Q.
Price times quantity. Got it.
Then average revenue, AR. That's your total revenue divided by the quantity sold. So TR divided by Q. Which, if you do the math...
P times Q divided by Q, it's just P price.
Exactly. Average revenue is effectively just the price per unit. Mm-hmm. And an interesting point. A firm's average revenue curve is actually the same as its demand curve. It shows the price people are willing to pay for each quantity.
Okay, AR is the demand curve. And then following the pattern, there must be marginal revenue.
You bet. Marginal revenue, MR, is the additional revenue a firm gets from selling one more unit of output.
So the extra cash from selling one more widget.
Precisely. Calculated as the change in total revenue divided by the change in quantity. Understanding MR is absolutely key for profit maximization.
Why is it so key?
Because firms will generally decide how much to produce by comparing marginal revenue with marginal cost. As long as the revenue from selling one more unit MR is greater than the cost of producing that unit MC, it makes sense to produce it.
Produce as long as MRMC.
You got it. They'll stop producing more at the point where MR equals MC, ideally. That's the profit maximizing output level, generally speaking.
Which brings us perfectly to the grand finale, profit itself. But you mentioned earlier, it's not quite as simple as revenue minus costs like you might see on a basic accounting sheet, is it? Economists have different types.
That's a really important distinction, yeah. When economists talk profit, they're usually considering opportunity costs too. So we distinguish between three main types.
Okay, lay them out for us.
First, normal profit. This sounds...
Right?
Yeah, normal. But it's specific. It's the situation where a firm's total revenue is exactly equal to its total costs. But those total costs include the opportunity costs.
Remind us what opportunity cost is again.
It's the value of the next best alternative you gave up to do what you're doing. For an entrepreneur, it might be the salary they could have earned working elsewhere. For capital invested, it's the return it could have earned in another investment.
Okay, so normal profit means you're covering all your costs, both the explicit ones like wages and materials, and these implicit opportunity costs.
Exactly. It's the minimum level of profit needed to keep the business owner and their resources committed to this particular venture, rather than switching to that next best alternative. It's essentially the economic break-even point.
So normal profit isn't really getting rich, it's just staying in the game viably. What about when firms do make more than that?
Right, that's supernormal profit, also called economic profit. This happens when total revenue is greater than total costs. Again, including those opportunity costs.
So TRTC, economic costs.
Yep. This means the firm is earning more than the minimum required to stay in business. It suggests they might have some advantage, maybe market power, a unique product, exceptional efficiency, innovation.
This is the profit that attracts attention and maybe new competitors.
Very often, yes. Supernormal profits are usually a signal in the market. And then the flip side is subnormal profit.
What's mean?
Total revenue is less than costs. Total costs, including opportunity costs. The firm isn't even covering its economic break-even point. It's making an economic loss.
So even if their accounting books show a small positive number, if it doesn't cover the opportunity cost, an economist calls it a loss.
That's right. Because the resources used in that business could be generating more value elsewhere. A subnormal profit situation is generally unsustainable in the long run. The firm would be better off shutting down and deploying those resources differently.
So just to summarize the calculation simply.
Yeah. Simply put, profit. Total revenue, total cost. Remembering TC includes opportunity cost for economists. If the result is positive, it's supernormal profit. If it's zero, it's normal profit. If it's negative, it's subnormal profit or an economic loss.
And you can see this on graphs, too.
Absolutely. You can visualize it as the vertical distance, or area, when multiplied by quantity, between the total revenue curve and the total cost curve. Or, very commonly, as the rectangle between the average revenue price curve and the average total cost curve multiplied by the quantity produced.
Wow. Okay, that was definitely a deep dive. We've really journeyed through the engine room of a business, haven't we?
We really have.
From understanding how production works differently in the short and long run, getting into the nitty-gritty of all those different costs, seeing how scale can be both a huge advantage and sometimes a disadvantage.
Right, those economies and diseconomies.
And finally, connecting it all to revenue and what profit truly signifies in economic terms.
Yeah, and stepping back, you know, grasping these core ideas really does give you a much more powerful lens for analyzing what businesses are doing.
Mm-hmm.
You can start to see the why behind their decisions, recognize the pressures they're under, the opportunities they're chasing. It moves beyond just headlines.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Well, next time you see a company announce a major expansion, or maybe notice a whole bunch of similar businesses popping up in one area.
Or even when you see a price change.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Think about these concepts. Are they chasing economies of scale, hitting diminishing returns, trying to reach their minimum efficient scale? Are external economies at play?
How might thinking about opportunity costs change how you evaluate a business's success or even your own career choices or investments?
It really does provide a whole new framework for understanding the economic world buzzing all around us. Something to definitely chew on.